Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. There's really two good martinis today from Jim's perspective. Not only are the New York Jets 4-1, but Jim now has bragging rights over all of his D.C. area friends who cheer for the Redskins for at least three more years, I would say. So congratulations.
Until we meet in the Super Bowl, yeah. It is. Now, here's the thing. The Redskins fan base strikes me as the biggest group of manic depressive fans, because they win the game, we're going to the Super Bowl. Yes. They lose, disband the franchise, Snyder will never let us win. So I get to see depression for one more week around here. Jets fans, by comparison, are like depressive, like we're feeling really good, but we're gonna lose anyway, we're playing the Patriots next week, we've got no shot, yada yada yada. So it's good, it's nice while it lasts, and then the depression will set in later.
All right, on to the real good martini today. And Jim, as you have probably noticed in the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of media stories about the dysfunction on some level inside the House Republican Conference after Boehner announced he was stepping down, supposedly effective October 30th. It looked like Kevin McCarthy was going to get the job. A lot of House conservatives didn't really like that. Ultimately, McCarthy said he's not going to run for speaker, so now they're trying to recruit Paul Ryan. Nobody's really sure how it's going to work out. Lots of stories on that. Not as many stories on the public food fight at the top of the Democratic National Committee. Here's NBC's Chuck Todd, and kudos to him for covering this story, explaining what's going on here.
Right in the midst of a crucial presidential election, a little bit of dysfunction inside the Democratic National Committee, and it's now breaking into the open. Two of the five vice chairs of the DNC are now basically in open revolt against the current chair of the party, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. The internal acrimony first erupted when Vice Chair Tulsi Gabbard says she was disinvited to last Tuesday's Democratic debate after she issued a public call for more debates.
And Debbie Wasserman Schultz has been pretty autocratic when it comes to the number of debates here. A lot of people accusing her of doing the bidding of the Clinton campaign. R.T. Ryback is the other vice chair besides Tulsi Gabbard, who is not very happy with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Chuck Todd flat out asked him, do you have doubts about Debbie Wasserman Schultz's ability to lead the party heading into 2016? And he was pretty honest.
I have serious questions, and it's not just about the debates. The fact of the matter is, sometime in the month or two before the convention, somebody's going to win or lose. It's going to be essential for the leader of the party to be able to say to everyone, look, it's been fair, we need you now, let's all pull together. That's what Democrats want. I think the only thing that's going to mess that up, frankly, is that I don't think the chair right now is in the position to be that peacemaker who builds that big tent for all of us.
Jim, it only took us a couple of weeks to figure out Debbie Wasserman Schultz was probably not a good choice for the Democrats, but we want her there as long as humanly possible.
Yeah, and there was an intriguing story. I think Politico had it a short while ago, indicating that the reason she's there is that Obama doesn't want to deal with the problems that would come with picking a new one. So really, it's inertia that has kept her in position, which, you know, works well for us. Every time she's on television, she seems terrible. Here's the thing. She uses the worst possible phrasing. Remember the time she said that Scott Walker had given women the back of his hand?
Yes.
And things like that. And what's interesting, it looks like the Democrats, she decided early on that the Democrats only needed six debates, only four before people started voting. They would start late. They would only be once a month. It would be, you know, not really designed for a lot of moments for an underdog or a challenger to really, you know, get a lot of chances to overtake the front runner. Well, Hillary Clinton has run into serious problems on her own, but there's kind of this sense that the DNC decided early on they wanted to see everything, wrap up fairly easily for Hillary Clinton so they could have a coronation. And it's not surprising that there are a bunch of Democrats who don't like that. What's interesting is that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, demonstrating the political instincts we've come to appreciate from her, really doesn't have any way of defending this, and she continues to stammer her way through this. And, you know, given the choice between the communication skills of Tulsi Gabbard or Debbie Wasserman, look, given a fight between a clam and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I bet on the clam in a debate. But, you know, Tulsi Gabbard is really one of the rising stars, real credibility, a war veteran. And when she says the process stinks, you know, if you're a real leader, you got to address that. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz is, you know, let me attack the member of Congress for disloyalty. Let's insinuate that she's doing something wrong. The six debate once a month, you know, format is just fine. And it's kind of a fun joy to watch the Democrats in disarray once again.
Jim, when you look at the Democrats, and especially in the wake of the debate, when you have one figure who is constantly putting her foot in the mouth and can't even refer to her own unborn children at one time as being human, versus a warrior, a veteran, and a person who is very knowledgeable and understands what it takes to provide leadership in the world, which one do you think has a better future in the Democratic Party?
Well, here's the ordinarily you'd say, oh, you know, Wasserman Schultz is terrible, you know, but she's been in the position a long time. They had a terrible midterms, right? They okayed 2012 because Obama got reelected and, you know, he kind of had a wave to take. You know, bad 2010 as well. It's not like you'd say, oh, she's so good at the communications aspect for it. My understanding is the fundraising has been terrible. What is the upside for Debbie Wasserman Schultz? And it sounds like the serious and the most, you know, important upside for the White House is that if she's there, it's like a status quo and you don't have to deal with all the problems of who do you replace it.
Amazing. All right. On to the bad martini now. And Jim, it turns out that agreements, either oral or written, sometimes the people we make those agreements with don't keep their promise. And this one seems to be done in almost record time. From the Washington Post, Chinese government hackers have attempted in the past few weeks to penetrate the networks of U.S. companies to steal their secrets, despite a pledge by China's president that they would not do so, according to private researchers. Chinese hackers have targeted at least seven U.S. companies since President Xi Jinping vowed last month in Washington that his country would not conduct economic cyber espionage, the theft of trade secrets and intellectual property for the benefit of the nation's industries, according to CrowdStrike. In the 3 weeks since he left Washington, including the day after he left, September 26th, hackers linked to the Chinese government have attempted to gain access to tech and pharmaceutical companies' networks, according to CrowdStrike co-founder Dmitry Alperovich. So they had a verbal agreement, Jim. I don't understand what went wrong here.
So it's kind of, one, all very predictable, and two, almost a parody of Obama administration decision-making, right? I mean, China goes in and gets pretty much all the OPM records. We have to pull out all of our spies out of China. I mean, it's about as bad a national security leak crisis as you could possibly imagine. And we hold the state dinner for China and the official welcome. And maybe remember Scott Walker saying, no, they shouldn't do that. We need to take a tougher line with them. And the big news coming out of that summit is we have an agreement. You know, now that they've stolen everything of value and we no longer have the ability to spy on them, we've agreed to not cyber hack, you know, cyber assault each other, not hack each other. Not try, you know. For China, it's like, well, we're pretty much done here. You know, we'll agree to stop doing this. But there's a little bit left against, you know, the American private companies. So they continue to do this. Greg, I almost get this feeling, but if China thinks there's no consequence to breaking a deal with us, is there any other country we've reached a deal with recently? Very high stakes, very big, Middle East, who maybe has a record of being duplicitous, maybe has a record of not quite respecting diplomatic niceties.
And who has also broken the agreement with the missile test. So
that's right. Exactly. This is like one of the least surprising bad martinis in a while. But I guess what's really happened, like the steadfast, determined denial of the Obama administration is pretty fascinating and unnerving and disturbing.
Yeah, it's a case study for someone. It'd be too depressing for us to do, but it could be funny on some level. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And this one actually goes back to Friday. Jake Tapper of CNN was up in New Hampshire with the Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton, her first sit-down interview following last week's Democratic debate. And he covered a lot of different territory. And here's how Hillary reacted in the most bizarre possible way to Tapper bringing up the issue of emails and Bernie Sanders' response to it.
I know Bernie Sanders said that, quote, the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails. But there are a lot of people who are not.
Well.
including FBI officials looking into whether national security was compromised because of this server.
Jim, you chuckle once when he does the Bernie quote. Why she got louder and laughing more after that? It's almost Joker-esque.
you beat me to the punchline there. People have joked about the annoying laugh or the fake laugh or the artificial laugh. One, it's a defense mechanism. And I guess the idea of, oh, Jake, the idea that I've ever done anything wrong ever is just so laughable. But it's not laughable. And it's interesting to see the cue that she gives to her supporters, which is to say this is not even worth taking seriously. Because if you took seriously, you'd have to answer questions about it. Hopefully she'll be answering the questions later this week on the Benghazi panel. My suspicion is you'll probably hear more of that laugh from the panel. And I just can't imagine, you know, 48 years of this, Greg.
It's going to be very difficult.
And I just did a closed caption for the entirety of that presidency.
Well, between the debate performance, her response to Sanders with the yes, yes, and the cackle there, and then this laugh, for a woman who in previous interviews said that, you know, she really regretted, she made some bad decisions, I think the sincerity card is wearing a little thin, or at least it should be at this point.
Yeah, I believe it's on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. She deeply regrets the decision she makes. She realizes that she erred, and she takes responsibility. And then Tuesdays, Thursdays, and weekends, this is all partisan witch hunt. She did nothing wrong, and it should be, you know, it's time for all of us to move on. By later in the week, it'll change.
Yeah, and some good news is that the latest CNN poll suggests that even though a lot of people think she won the debate, the poll numbers really haven't changed much for her nationally. And just as an update, it was 72 hours ago that we heard the vice president would make a decision on whether or not he will run. The 72 hours are up, and now we're on a 48-hour clock, Jim.
Yeah. I believe this may take one more Friedman unit. For those not understanding that reference, I believe it was like from about 2003 to about 2007, Tom Friedman wrote in just about every column, the next 6 months are really going to be decisive for the future of Iraq. And, you know, every couple of, you know, 6 months would go by and you'd say, well, the next 6 months are really, you know, sometimes in life, things just kind of muddle through year by year. Clearly, Biden is coming up against a deadline. I think a lot of people are getting a little tired of this. It's coming. It's coming. Godot has already announced he's not running. Right. I mean, just for perspective there. He actually arrived, you know. Guffman has also made his decision as well.
I think day three of the convention, we might still be hearing from Ted Kaufman. It could still happen.
It could still, yeah. Keep your powder dry. Yeah. once again, you know, possibly by the end of the week, people were saying, oh, Biden is in and Jim and Greg were wrong. But I continue to think, look, if he wants to jump in, he will jump in.
Yes.
And if he, you know, the fact that he hasn't is an indicator that he doesn't really want to do it and thus is not likely to make that choice.
Agreed. Nothing has changed in our estimation. So, Jim, very good to start off the week, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.